o biznesu, brandu a brandingu. Brand Talk.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Brand Talk. Today I have a pleasure of welcoming Mark Pollard, one of the most influential strategists and author, Strategy is Your Words. Welcome, Mark.
What's up? How are you?
In my notes, I have you working for the great agencies like Leo Burnett.
Yes.
And you have some prestigious clients like McDonald's.
Sure.
Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
EA Games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And The Economist.
Yes. That's true. But it's funny that you call them prestigious because they're just people. They're just people you work with. And when you're in a situation where you get to work with people like that, when you start out, it's like, oh my God, that's amazing.
Yes.
And then they're just people. But thank you.
Yeah, but you know, the all is about the brands.
Totally.
And when the brands biggest, it is the prestigious for
I'll take
audience.
It. I'll take it, as long as it impresses people more than my $5 t-shirt.
I love your $5 t-shirt.
It's not bad. It's
comfortable. Where are your glasses for the $10?
They're in my pocket. I got 3 for $10, so they're okay. Less than $10 each.
This will be great and funny today.
It's not that I'm cheap. I just, you know.
Yeah. When we started, I can tell about your career. When you started, like a strategist and how you become it.
Yeah, so I wasn't a full-time strategist in the industry until I was 28 years old. But growing up, I played chess. Okay. I did play soccer, football. We didn't have what was available now, but I was a midfielder. And in basketball, I was a point guard. So I liked making decisions that would help other people succeed. I know that. I know that's sort of in me quite a lot. When I was 20, I was working in digital agencies. I was doing user experience, information architecture for prestigious companies like Levi's. Levi's was my first client. I was like 19 or 20 and helping them create content. And they were one of the first brands in Australia, or probably in the Southern Hemisphere, to actually do content. That wasn't a common thing in 1998, a very long time ago. So yeah, the first part of my 20s, I was making a hip-hop magazine. I happened to be working in digital agencies. I never thought about having an advertising career. Got married at 25, a kid at 28, and thought that I needed to have a career and became a planner.
Okay.
So that's the sort of messiness that led to where I am right now.
It's a great way. Yeah.
It's okay.
And you started in the Sydney.
Yeah, I'm from Sydney.
Yeah, you are from Sydney.
Yeah, 13 years in New York, but I grew up in Sydney. Yeah.
And when you
moved to
New York. Yeah.
So I'm 46 now. So I was 33. My son just turned 18. We moved here when he turned 5. So I was 33.
Okay.
Years old.
And you like your change of this market and the style of the life?
I feel very conflicted. I mean, I walk around places like Prague and I'm like, this is incredible. Why don't I live somewhere like here? And New York's amazing in many ways, but it is basically a big office. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of poverty. A lot of people are not doing well. So you're either in the office or you're not doing well, or maybe you're serving the people who are in the offices. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird. I find it quite isolating. I find American culture very individualistic, very capitalistic. Mm-hmm. And I've benefited from those things, but I have more of a social life and I have more life when I am outside of the US. So it's a little bit complicated because I can do a good business there in a way that I couldn't do in Australia.
Okay.
But I pay a price. I pay a particular psychological price for that.
And do you want to move back to the Sydney or?
No, I don't feel drawn back to Australia just yet. It's a long way away and I like to do strange stuff. Australia is great. It's a bit strange, but there's not a big enough market for me to feed myself and my family in doing strange stuff. So I think I need to be in a different part of the world or in a cheaper part of the world. Australia has relatively high taxes, high cost of doing business and a small population a long way away from everywhere. The fact that it's a long way away from everywhere means that a lot of people want to move there because they want stability. They're coming from difficult countries. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I respect that. But for me, I want to be in the rest of the world.
Okay. It's cool. And I know you're a lot traveling to the South America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see.
Because I like reggaeton.
Yeah.
Reggaeton section of the interview. And then we do Brazil funk. Yeah. I love Latin America. It's a difficult place, but I love it.
I see you have a lot of speakings and something or like workshops in Brazil.
Brazil, Ecuador, yeah. Peru, Mexico City. They're the main ones. I've done Argentina. I might be back there this year.
And
Chile. Yeah, I like it. Because you got to understand even from Europe, but also from Australia, everywhere's a long way away. Yeah. So I go to Latin America. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like I did a project on Brazil when I was like 8 years old. I still remember okay. it. That doesn't mean you know Brazil. And then you go there and you're like, oh my God, I love the music. And the people are very warm, very open, not cold, very open. I love Brazil funk. But they're doing it tough right now. It's a difficult country. But I do love Brazil. I love Brazilians.
Brazil, yeah, okay. Yeah. And there are a lot of work for strategists in Brazilians.
I think strategy is struggling right now in the world, and it struggles in Latin America. There are strategists, but they struggle to get good traction.
Mm-hmm.
Brazil is a large country with a big population and a very good advertising industry. And there are a lot of strategists in Brazil relative to most other countries. But they're all, most of them, not all, a lot of them are struggling to get traction.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, this is maybe for me, it's a difficult market, maybe.
Brazil?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah? Have you done much work there?
No, because...
Just from here? Just from here, that's your analysis. it's structurally different. So the way Brazil has been explained to me is that there are a few companies that own everything.
Yeah. Okay.
They own the media agencies and the advertising agencies mm-hmm. and some of the entertainment brands.
Okay.
And that's a similar model to Japan. So there are, I believe, I don't know if it's Dentsu, but there are massive companies in Japan that own mm-hmm. advertising agencies, media agencies. Oh, and the Olympics.
Okay.
Okay. That doesn't happen in the US. It doesn't happen in most parts of the world. I think Brazil's a little bit like that. And so it affects the way that things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
It's not great. It's not great if you're a strategist in it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I see your workshops and you have a lot of people on this and I like it.
Yeah, I mean the people who come to our workshops, they're just, they're good. For me, they're really good and interesting people. And they're just trying to work out how to have a life.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. And they feel upset that they think they have something to offer. And then they go to work every day, most days, not every day, but most days. And they're like, how do I work in this situation? And that's a global thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people struggling with, you know, the strategist thinking and creative brief. And
mm-hmm.
now we can back to your book.
Yes.
What inspired you to write the book?
Pain.
Strategies,
pain.
Your words.
Everything I do comes from trauma and pain.
Pain. Yeah. What was your pain? Where did it started, the pain?
So, I mean, I thought about putting a book like this together when I was back in Australia. So in my early 30s, I actually put a proposal to Kickstarter when Kickstarter.com was different and they rejected it. They said it wasn't creative enough. And then as I left corporate America... So I was 5 years working in other agencies in corporate America and I didn't like it, generally speaking. I had good times and I met good people. I don't feel I did very interesting work or any work that I'm proud of, to be honest, maybe one or two things. And I was like, you know, I got to get a book out. I've been talking about writing a book for a very long time. And so a couple of the last jobs I had in America I really didn't like and I used them in this book. So half the book is about what I believe goes on in the quirky strategist mind and half of it is practical techniques that help people do their jobs. But I probably needed to be in a very bad place, like a place of crisis in the US. Like
mm-hmm.
I don't want to work for anybody else ever again. I don't want to work inside corporate America, but I think I can help people in corporate America.
Okay.
What do I do? And so that's where the book comes from.
Wow. How long you write the book?
Writing the book itself was not that long, 4 to 5 months.
Wow.
But I actually started I started the concept of the book in Prague.
Mm-hmm. Whoa, really?
Yeah. So I came here 7 years ago for a conference called Web Expo. Yeah. And I was invited to talk. And I do speeches, but I prefer to do interactive things. And what I decided to do was to hand draw a lot of my training sessions. And I put them into slides. And I came to Web Expo. And I think we had 400 or 500 people. Yes. In maybe the Lucerna, like that amazing theater in the middle of town.
Okay.
And I had a 45-minute session, but that was the first time that I'd hand-drawn all of my stuff and took it seriously. But I've been training the content for a while. So when it came to writing the book about 2 or 3 years later, I'd practiced my content a lot. Uh-huh. But I hadn't written it. So I thought, let me write it.
Yeah, and you write a lot.
I do, yeah. So I also took, you know, I took my tweets at the time. I had, you know, I used to tweet a lot. And so I took all the tweets and I looked at what was working, what wasn't. But if you want to be an author, it's a very lazy thing to say, hey, I'm going to take my top 100 tweets and turn them into a book and basically have the tweets as the book, which some authors do. I think that's really lazy. I took my tweets and I was like, how do I, because it's a different format. So I took the tweets, for example, and LinkedIn posts. I was like, how do I use them in a way that fits what I want to do with the book, mm-hmm. which is a different format.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is a good tip. When you're starting the writing to social media, you can create notes and starting to write the book.
Totally. Yeah. But I think you can use social media to test ideas.
Yeah.
But each channel, let alone a book, is a different format. And so you have to honor the format. You can't just copy and paste between Twitter and Instagram and then into a book and then say, oh, I'm good. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. And which social media site do you like
right
most?
Now?
Yeah.
Well, I've been doing a lot of experimentation. This year I've mostly been experimenting on Instagram Reels.
Yeah.
YouTube Shorts. LinkedIn is annoying.
Why?
It's just annoying. Well, first of all of the platforms have become TikTokified.
Yeah.
So whatever your follower count is, whatever your subscriber count is, it doesn't matter that much. You have to publish content that competes often against the best on the platform that day,
mm-hmm.
but definitely against the best in your category that day.
Mm-hmm.
So like I know people who might have 4 million subscribers on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
largely through YouTube Shorts. And then they're like, oh, you know what? I want to do longer form videos because mm-hmm. they want to experiment with the format, but also monetization is different with longer form videos, probably better. And then they get 5,000 views.
Mm-hmm.
4 million subscribers, 5,000 views. What? So there's a lot of that happening on all the platforms right mm-hmm. now. LinkedIn has jammed a lot of advertising in,
yeah.
and it's very hard to get. It's difficult right now.
Yeah.
Let alone there's a little bit of research that shows that people are liking things a bit less. Mm-hmm. Everyone's just a bit burnt out. So it's kind of weird right now. But I'd say I've been experimenting with Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube Shorts a lot.
Mm-hmm.
LinkedIn I'm a little bit quiet on right now. And Twitter is fine, but I don't use it as much as I used to.
Yeah. It's great.
What do you find is good?
I'm fan of the Instagram.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of fans on LinkedIn. Yeah.
Yeah. LinkedIn's great.
I know. I've 8,000 people.
Yeah.
I have on LinkedIn. Yes. But I don't like the writing.
Yeah, you don't know. Like the writing?
Yeah. I don't like it.
Okay. Why don't you like the writing?
I don't know because I must prepare it and, you know.
So why are you doing it? Idea. Why are you doing it? Are you chasing the outcome, which is like the fame, but you don't like the process?
Yeah.
Awkward.
Okay.
Awkward. You got to enjoy the process because whatever the outcome is, it doesn't last anyway. So let's say you go from 8,000 followers to 10,000.
Yeah.
How does that change your life?
Nothing.
Yeah. So it's good to enjoy the journey. And especially right now because of what I said with the, what's being called the TikTokification of the algorithm, right? I have, 48,000 followers on LinkedIn. I don't count. I mean, I saw the number this morning, but I don't count it. Obviously, I just saw the number. And I'm like, I could post something today that reaches 500 people, 10,000 people. 5 years ago, when I had 20,000 followers, I could reach like 500,000 people on LinkedIn. So
yeah, you hit it.
I've been pretty sad and demotivated when it comes to LinkedIn this year. But also, I've been experimenting with different topics on other channels. So I've been experimenting with what I call comedy.
Okay.
Things that are funny to me. And I had like an Instagram reel reach 1.6 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also been doing content about hair. And I have a separate account.
Yeah,
we can talk about it. I'm happy to talk about it. I have a separate account.
Hair from Turkey.
From Turkey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Happy to talk about it. But I set up an account to test a different topic. I have 100 followers. Yeah. Nobody wants to follow this account. But my content reaches 200,000 to 300,000 people. Right? Oh, so it's like, well, who would want to follow an account about my hair? Right?
Yeah.
But there's a big search intent. And it's a big topic because everybody has hair. So it's been really interesting stepping outside of strategy and testing different things.
It's fantastic.
I love it.
Yeah. It is great because one of my hosts have the story with the hair from Turkey.
Yeah.
And yes. It is one of the best negotiators in Czech Republic and Europe.
Okay.
Yes. This year he invited the Chris Voss there in the Czech Republic.
Okay.
It's great. And they have the same story with the hair. A lot of people want to know the story about the hair.
Yeah. when I was in Cannes, I had maybe 2 to 3 guys, really senior people, come up to me every day and go, do you have someone in Turkey? I'm like, yeah, I got someone in Turkey.
Yeah.
I got someone.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. So we're talking about hair transplants. Just make it up. It literally doesn't bother me.
What has been your biggest success in your career?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm very happy that I published this book.
And what about your platform, Sweathead?
Yeah, that's amazing.
You have a lot of people.
There are a lot of people. Yeah, I feel like it's the book. And then I had a good run in advertising at Leo Burnett when I was 28. When my first full-time account planning or strategy job, we had a really good run with work, award-winning work at Cannes. That I contributed a little bit to, so I'm not trying to take all the glory. I would say that era was good. Writing a book was good. Success for me right now is like, can I build more of my days around what I like to do? So for me, most of my days feel successful.
Mm-hmm.
They're not easy days, but most of my days I'm like, okay, so you know, you're struggling with this and that, but you wrote a thing, you're about to go to another country, you're going to be on stage, you're going to talk, and that pays for your family. To me, that's crazy. Crazy.
It's crazy. And how long do you build your Sweathead platform?
I think we are 6 and a bit years old. However, I've been writing about strategy online since maybe 2007. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's 17 years. It's all connected. And before that, I was publishing a hip-hop magazine with an online community.
Yeah.
With an email newsletter. So all of these things are next to each other, all together.
Yeah, it's community. It's great. I'm in New York Facebook group.
Yeah, we have a Facebook group. Yeah. Facebook stuff right now. But yeah, we have a Facebook group with 20,000 people. Yeah.
This is one of the best things for the chat or groups. The Facebook is better than LinkedIn and something.
Can be. They're all not good.
Yeah.
Some of them were good and now they're all not good.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, so imagine building a community with 20,000 people and then the platform that was trying to get you to do it just makes it harder and harder and harder to reach people. That's what Facebook's done to us. Like, it's not okay.
Yeah, the community management is so hard.
There is none.
Yeah.
You know, there's approved or don't approve, but there's no real
tools. Do you have some team? About you?
Yeah. I mean, so this year a little bit smaller. Last year I had 8 to 10 people working with me through the year, not full time, but through the year.
Yeah.
So social media management, social media design, podcast editing, video editing. And then when we do our conferences, we'll often hire about five to seven people to do video editing.
Mm-hmm.
Last year I had a website development company as well. And then probably paid out in the past 2 years about 50 strategists to teach. This year I'm keeping things small because of what is happening in the economy, and that's kind of frustrating.
Yeah.
But yeah, my goal was to build a business that I could bring strategists into to pay them to do what they like to do. And that's tough. And that's why like I love CAM, but there's like a lot of conferences like that. They don't pay a lot of people. They have a team.
Uh-huh.
Everyone talks for free. And so in the business world, that's called an externality, you know, so you have a business and there are externalities. Other people will take care of that, right? So pollution is an externality, I believe. And so most conferences operate with this model where maybe either no one gets paid or a handful of people get paid, but not everyone gets paid to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to not do that, but it's a really tough model, especially when the economy shakes out like it is right now.
Yes, yes. I see it, a lot of communities are large and the time stopped and the people go lived and change the community. And, you know, was a community I loved was the future
from
the Chris Doe.
Yeah.
I started on them videos. And
so Chris's world is interesting. His world crossed over with mine and other people's world in 2020. I didn't know about his world. It's a big world. He has a big world. And then maybe through podcasts and Clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Rest in peace. And YouTube, there was this coming together of worlds that were before that very separate.
Mm-hmm.
So like a video editor who wants to be a strategist, a graphic designer who wants to be a strategist. My world was account planners in advertising.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, these worlds started to rub against each other. It was super interesting. And so, you know, Chris has obviously had a huge effect on a lot of people. But I didn't see that coming together until 2020.
Mm-hmm. It's great. I have the question. What do you think about the role of the language and word in strategic thinking?
Well, it's critical. And most of the words in strategy annoying. So that's why I wrote this book. I still remember sitting down and thinking about what I wanted to write about because I knew the content. Like I sat down, I wrote a list of the content and I was like, well, I have to say the word strategy. I have to say it. It has to be in the title. And then I remember sitting there going, oh, it's words. And I thought, that's so obvious.
Yeah.
Like I thought, that's so dumb. And I had an argument with myself for like an hour. It was over days, but I had an aggressive argument with myself. Well, if it's so dumb and if it's so obvious, why do you keep talking about it when you teach? So I was like, strategy, words. Okay, what's in the middle? And hence the topic. So yeah, words are critical. Most strategy in all languages, the words, they're too big, they're too long, they're too academic, they're not useful. So I try to coach people to think critically and then to use words that are more like the way that we would speak to each other.
Yes.
A little poetic, but more like how we speak to each other rather than trying to sound like a strategist. So yeah, words are super important.
Yeah. And now actually strategy is the one of the expensive word in the world.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, you pay by the letter.
Yeah. Because a lot of people want the big money for the strategy. And how we say it in London, a lot of people prepare the strategy for Instagram, but not for brand or your business.
It's hard. I mean, you know, as you mentioned earlier, I've worked with really prestigious brands. But like I could sit down with a CMO and work some stuff out. If we had a bit of research, I could work some stuff out.
Yeah.
Three sentences, four sentences. What's that worth? $1 million? $2?
Uh-huh.
Right? And so because there can feel like there's this arbitrary value placed on the work, people try to justify it through hours and through looking really important. But once you've done it for a long time, it's not that a quick conversation will make amazing strategy happen. It could. It's just that the way we value the work leads to behavior that makes the work look less valuable.
It makes sense.
I think so.
Yeah.
I just said that for the first time, but I like it.
I love it.
I love your jacket.
Thanks. I have the points there. It's one of the biggest points from your London workshop for me. It's 4 points. It's about the business problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And a lot of people don't know it's your problem is about the business. Yeah, because maybe they need the creative or ads and they don't know it is a business issue.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about this framework that I created called the 4 points framework, which is about trying to solve a problem which I define as a human problem behind the business problem, which is an obstacle or a barrier that's in the way of people doing something or buying something. Yeah, look, I like that framework, and it was trying to solve something that I struggled with, the four C's, which is probably the most used and the most amazing. It's not amazing. It's just a simple, great strategy framework. But it doesn't always center the problem. And I bought into the idea at Leo Burnett when I was 28, 29, that our jobs as strategists is to solve problems. And I don't believe that in a dogmatic way. You know, I could talk to a founder about a brand that they want to build, and maybe we don't use the word problem, but they say a few things. I'm like, ooh, that could totally lead to a brand. But generally speaking, I like advertising campaigns, especially to solve some kind of problem. Like, why aren't people buying the product? Yeah. I want to start there. But that's only one of probably three and a bit ways to do this kind of work. But I like it.
Yeah, I really like this because I love the business and I love the creating something new. And, you know, this is the way when I start like a brand strategist, because I love a lot of the business, create some business opportunity and help them for the, I don't know, great make brand again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I really like your 4 points.
Thank you.
In your book.
I don't mind it.
Yeah. And we use it after London. Yeah. I use it in our strategy workshops. Yes, because in the start, you can use the easily for the understanding of the business owners. How it's the problem is deep of your business.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, because they need a new website. Yes, and there are 10, again, problems around the website.
Well, that's what makes strategists annoying. Someone will say, I need a new website or I need 5 videos. And the strategist says, why? Why? And also, why are you telling me before you go on your summer holidays? But we tend to say, like, well, why? And people glitch. They're like, what do you mean, why? I just make the website.
Yeah.
And part of it's just about intellectual curiosity, but a big part of it is also about wanting to do right by the client,
yeah,
in spite of them,
yeah.
So absolutely, yeah. So that's a challenging dynamic.
Yeah. What do you think? What is the biggest challenge today for strategists?
Well, according to a piece of research I did a few months ago, so I did a survey. It's not super scientific, but I did a survey, and 300 people responded. And the main challenge that they're finding right now, according to this survey, is that they don't believe that clients are okay with doing interesting work. So they believe that clients are too scared to do interesting work. Another problem is around training. Mm-hmm. A lot of strategists for a long time, because the industry is so young, they're not getting trained, coached, or mentored well. The bosses are young. The strategists are young. People in the 30s and 40s, they're losing jobs a lot. Mm-hmm. Over the past year or two. The 4A's, which is the main advertising body in the US, published research, I think it was last year, showing that the growth of jobs in the early 20s was like a lot more than normal. And there was a decrease, I believe, in the 30s and 40s. So there's been a juniorization of the industry. And this happens. It happens in cycles. Advertising is infatuated with youth and suspicious of old people. But it just leads to, you know, I work with people who are like 23 and they're the only strategist in their agency and they have no boss.
Okay.
good luck with that. And it's not that it's impossible, but there's a lot of that, you know.
Yeah. And what do you think about using the AI in the strategist work?
I mean, what do I think about it? Whatever gets you where you need to go is fine. I think, you know, I'm not going to say anything that hasn't been said about AI, where creatively it's not there yet for the strategist. Like, it's not yet going to write an amazing creative brief.
Yeah.
But it's okay at finding patterns. Like, let's say you've, you know, interviewed 20 people. And you ask ChatGPT to look at, you know, look for 5 or 10 patterns. It'll probably find 5 to 10 patterns. looking at use cases, category entry points, like it can do some okay stuff. But what I've found when we've talked to strategists in our community is they want AI to do their timesheets and to do the things they don't want to do.
Yes.
And when they use it for more critical thinking and creative work, they feel that the outcome is mediocre. And then they're like, okay, so how do I use it? And then they start to talk about, I use it like an intern, like a sidekick. Yeah, I'm sure that'll change.
Yeah.
Probably faster than we hope, but it'll probably change.
Yeah, I really like the fantasy of the Iron Man and the Jarvis, like the assistant.
Talk to me.
Yes. And there was the Tony Stark and his assistant was the AI, the Jarvis.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like my fantasy. You can use them for your work. Now maybe we can use the ChatGPT. Maybe we see. And in our work, when we create something new and they have the impact of this work and can you help you?
Yeah.
But now I don't see a lot of help you, but maybe create something better, shorten. And some research is good when you need something.
Yeah, look, I think the biggest issue right now is I believe that the market for advertising is a market for mediocre advertising, right? Like 10% of anything is any good,
yeah,
and the rest is not. So if the main market for advertising or brand is just mediocre thinking,
mm-hmm.
AI is great at that.
Yeah.
But what do all the strategists do who are selling mediocre thinking, knowingly or not?
Uh-huh.
So that's going to be a challenge. There's always going to be 10%, 5% of people who will push further and further, yes, and further. Because if you think about the way that humans are, you know, we've moved around the world and we reach the edge of a continent. What do? We get on a boat and we go to another continent. We launch rocket ships into space. I really do believe that there's a group of people in any generation who will see what exists and go, we're going to go further. And they're the ones who will take all of this further. But if you're selling mediocrity, it's going to be a rough decade. It's just going to be rough.
In the last month, we got one of the example when two different companies create the same concept in AI.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the similar ads.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But were they upfront about it? Did they talk about it? That this is what we did? Or were they pretending?
It's about, how to say it, in the banking sector, segment.
In the Czech Republic?
Yeah.
Czechia, as we call it.
Yeah.
Back in America. Yeah, but that's problematic because then the bank, what's the bank going to think? Oh, I guess we don't need you.
Yeah.
Right? So what happened?
I don't know because we see it in the consultancy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we said, hey, it's the same like your like your the opener.
Copying? Twins.
They copycat, yeah.
Yeah.
And said, oh my God, what do we now do? And we know the agency created the creative brief and everything and another creative agency create the same, you know.
But like, so I don't know the situation. And forgive me if I'm talking about people I know, let alone people you know. But that's a lack of creative leadership. And increasingly what we see is the wrong people are running these things.
Yeah.
Someone who's actually a creative leader might say, look, let's just use these tools to come up with something. And they look at what comes out and they're like, let's get further.
Yeah.
Maybe make the tools go further. That's fine. And then eventually they're going to push it further. So that, to me, the problem there is a lack of creative leadership. It's not AI's problem. But if you're the client, why would you hire either of them?
Yeah.
I wouldn't. It's a complete lack of imagination, a complete lack of leadership. And sorry if I know you.
Absolutely. Can you explain your four points concept for our...
Sure.
for our people and strategists, how can use it in the practice?
Yeah, so the 4 points framework involves problem at the top, insight on the left, advantage on the right, strategy at the bottom. You need a business issue or a personal issue. A business issue could be as simple as sales are down. A personal issue could be you're criticizing yourself a lot and that's holding you back from things you want to achieve. Okay, so you can apply these frameworks in a personal and in a professional way. The problem I define as the human problem behind the business problem. And what that means is I'm looking for an obstacle or a barrier that's in the way of people from doing something or buying something. What's their attitude? Why aren't they doing a thing? Insight is an unspoken human truth. In the 4 points framework, I want the insight to what I would call open up the problem. It's a little bit abstract, but open up the problem. Advantage is how your brand, or if it's personal, how your brand is unique and motivating in people's minds. And there was a lot of research that would argue against that. Not to lose you on this right now, but there's a lot of research that talks about how differentiation, how you're different, what your advantage is, doesn't matter that much.
Yeah.
But there are scholars at Oxford arguing with people at the Ehrenberg Bass Institute in South Australia about all of this.
Yeah, I know.
And then there's strategy. So a new way, I use the word new, a new way of seeing your thing, your brand, based on all of that. Strategy solves the problem by putting the insight and advantage together. It's all jargon, but I use it in a pretty straightforward way when I use it.
Yeah. And I love the practice examples in your book about New York Knicks and Mighty Jungle. You have a lot of examples.
I do have examples.
Yeah, examples in your book, and it's great. You go to straight to the point. Yes, you got to the problem. Yes, this business issue, the insight, the new truth of new light at the problem.
Yeah.
Yes, the advantage is something like loneliness. Yes, for me.
Let's talk about hair transplants. Why do you think that people would not go to Turkey to get a hair transplant? In one sentence, what comes to mind? And you can't get it right or wrong. It's not a test.
Okay.
Which I think is also really important because I coach a lot of people and I'll ask questions. I'm like, I'm not testing you. What comes to mind?
What's come to mind? I don't know. A lot of people have a problem with the hair.
Yeah. So why wouldn't they go to Turkey? So they find out about Turkey being a great place to get a hair transplant.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they go?
Because you have good experience.
No, but no, why wouldn't they go?
Yeah, wouldn't they go?
What's the barrier?
What's the barrier?
Just one. There could be 50, but give me one.
Oh, the money?
Yeah, it could be too expensive. Okay, so what we do is we talk to people like, why wouldn't you go? Oh, it's too expensive.
Yeah.
I've never been to Turkey.
Yeah.
I'm scared of going to, people are scared of going to Turkey. Turkey's an amazing place, by the way, but some people who've never been there,
they
see the news, protests, etc., and they get scared. Istanbul's amazing. Yes, people get scared.
Okay.
You know, maybe they think the quality of medical care isn't very good.
Okay.
Maybe they think they're going to get ripped off. Maybe they think they're going to go there and their hair will fall out 3 months later.
Okay.
Right. So we just list all of these things. Yes. This is what we're trying to do. We're trying to understand the problem. And then we choose probably based on research, one that is the biggest problem. And then we dig into it. Like what's causing that and what's causing that and what's causing that. And then you go from something that's relatively superficial, like, oh, I don't know, I'm nervous about going to Turkey.
Okay.
To something that's more primal, more psychological, and more ripe for a creative solution. Because advertising needs to trigger an emotional reaction. I'm not into propaganda. I'm not into the manipulative forces of advertising. But just from a creative and psychological point of view, we want to start deep. And then the solution comes out of it in a way where people are like, oh.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, we can talk hypothetically about a framework, but I always like to situate reality like a practical example within a framework. So people are like, oh, it's not just like intellectual.
It's true. And when you know a lot of people going to for the new teeth and hair to their Turkey, you want to be
nose jobs, boob jobs.
Yeah.
Great food.
Yeah. I was the last weekend in Turkey.
You were? Yeah. Where'd you go?
On the holiday with my family. You know,
where?
Antalya.
Antalya. I've never been, but it looks amazing. Yeah. Antalya, Izmir, Istanbul.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Istanbul is on the north, yes.
Yeah, Turkey's incredible. And a lot of the world, even though Turkey's like a massive country with a massive history, a lot of the world doesn't hear about it much. What I would encourage anyone who's listening to this who wants to be a strategist or wants to do better strategy is just to keep the language simple. I went to Georgia last year. We could have gone to Georgia 6 years ago. My daughter was like top five in chess for girls in the USA, and there was a world championship in Georgia, northeast of Turkey. I didn't know anything about Georgia. I've traveled a bit, but I was like, I don't know what's going on. And the reputation as we Googled it was you might get kidnapped. Yeah. Right. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but we're like, oh my God, I don't feel comfortable. Okay. And also around that time, Russia had invaded two parts of Georgia.
Yeah.
So problem in the 4 points framework could start with, I don't want to be kidnapped.
Okay.
Now I could dig into that. Why don't you want to be kidnapped? But I think that like, well, because I don't want to be kidnapped. So sometimes the problem statement could be provocative and sharp enough and you don't need to dig into it. But what it is not is some academic, intellectual, jargon-filled, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we want to keep the language simple.
Yes. Keep the language simple and use it in the creative and in the presentation. Don't create the presentation about 100 pages. And
it's true.
Yeah, because I really love your presentation. You one slide, two slide, hey, hello. And we have the 10 slides to all presentation from the business to the brand. And it is great. And yes, how you say it, it is mastery of the word.
Yeah.
And I really like it.
Yeah, it takes confidence. So.
Yeah. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you a lot for your visit in the Prague. And tomorrow we see you at the workshop.
Absolutely. I think I have to steal your clothes so that I look good because I was going to dress exactly like this in $5 clothes.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.